The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj on Ram Leela, recorded on March 25th, 1999 at Kishore Kishori Mandir, Chicago.
वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाश्री गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री राम जय जय राम श्री राम जय जय राम Yeah. I should end at 7. I am very grateful for the opportunity to be with you on this very auspicious celebration of Sri Ram Navami. The aarti is at 7, so I'll just talk until it's 7. No plan. Whatever time it ends. Krishna explains in Gita, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chatuskritam dharma samstapanaradhaya sambhavami juge juge. That whenever there is a decline in religious principles, whenever there is a uprise in irreligiosity, Krishna descends to annihilate the miscreants, to reestablish the principles of religion, and to protect his devotees. Kishore Kishori, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his eternal divine consort, are the presiding deities of Chicago, in fact, of the entire existence. And it is for their pleasure that we have come together today to celebrate one of their most prominent, all-attractive incarnations, Lord Sri Ram. The Brahma Samhita explains that Lord Ram, Lord Narasimha, Vamana, Kurma, Matsya, these are all various expansions of Lord Krishna. They all have eternal planets where they preside in within Vaikuntha, and they descend into this world to reveal their all-attractive pastimes. Krishna does not require to come to this world to kill the demons. He can do this through the forces of his own nature, material existence. He can do so through the power of time, or he can even empower his devotees to do so. And to reestablish the principles of a religion, similarly, Krishna can do that by other means. However, to establish the all-attractive eternal pastimes of the Lord, to attract people's hearts to hear and chant, and to ultimately awaken love of God within their hearts through remembering pastimes, the Lord descends personally within this material world. In this material existence, people take birth due to their previous karmic activities. We take birth in the womb of a particular mother of a particular species of life as a result of our previous karmas, karmana daiva netrena. But when Krishna comes to this world, it is by his own sweet will. He is above the laws of karma. He is the master of the entire material existence. But how and when Krishna comes, we should study very carefully. In spiritual life, generally, it is only when there is a seriously urgent condition do we take seriously the necessity of calling out for the mercy of the Lord. In this world, the ahankar, or the false ego, is so strong that as long as we think that everything is all right and I am comfortable, we may be religious, we may be pious, but we do not deeply surrender helplessly at the feet of the Lord. It is when we are put in a situation of helplessness, of desperation, Of course, by reading the Holy Scriptures, we can come to that conclusion even without being cast into painful conditions of life. But this helpless state where we are faced with terrible opposition is a very healthy climate to meet with Krishna. And we see in all the great avatars, there was always a situation of desperation where his devotees had to helplessly pray for mercy before the Lord would come. The great avatar of Sri Ram is no exception to this principle. There was a terrible asura of the name Ravan. Ravan had 10 heads, 20 arms. He was so powerful. He had performed great austerities. He was a scholar of the Vedic knowledge. He knew the principles that I am not this body. He knew the principles that you can gain power by appeasing higher powers. He performed severe tapasya. He achieved benediction from Lord Brahma. He didn't want to be killed by anyone. But Ravana was so powerful that the people living on this earth planet were so insignificant to him that he did not even consider them a challenge. So human beings and animals of this world were not a threat to him. So he asked for the benediction that none of the demigods, the gods, the Gandharvas, the Kinaras would ever defeat him. But he didn't even bother to ask for a benediction that he would be immune from battle with humans. Ravana received these benedictions. He also received benediction after worshipping Lord Shiva for 100 years, offering prayers according to the Shastras. Lord Shiva gave him benediction of tremendous power and insurmountable weapons. So Ravana was feeling himself so great that he offended everybody and anybody. He literally challenged the entire universe. He defeated Indra. He defeated Kuvera and took his airplane, Pushpaka. Not only that, he stole away the wealth of Kuvera with his brother Kumbhakarna, his son Indrajit. He made such havoc in this world. He created a beautiful kingdom in the island called Sri Lanka, where practically everything, the buildings, the roads, were made out of pure gold. He usurped the wealth of everyone he defeated. He was harassing sages. He was destroying the abodes of the demigods. He was exploiting innocent women. In this situation, the great sages and rishis, Indra and the gods themselves of the heavens, felt themselves so harassed. Their hearts were so pained. They understood there was nothing they could do against this Ravana. Nothing. He was beating them down, defeating them at every moment. In this situation, when all other ideas were utterly futile, they had to turn to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. And they prayed to him intensely. And when the devotees prayed to him in this mood, Krishna always appears to save his devotees. So how Lord Ram appeared is a wonderful, wonderful story. There was a great king of the Raghu dynasty of the name Dasarath. His capital was Ayodhya. There, he lived very peacefully. He was like a father to all of his citizens. Thank you, Hare Krishna. However, there was one great anxiety in his heart. He approached the great sages headed by his own chief priest Vasishtha Muni and expressed his heart that I have achieved everything a king could want. There's no crime at all in my kingdom. Every citizen is protected and they love me like their own father. However, for so many generations, our dynasty has ruled our kingdom. And it is the duty of a king, first and foremost, to make sure that future generations are protected by the principles of religion. I have no son. Although I have three principals' wives, Kaushalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra, none of them have borne me a single son. In the past, Dasarath Maharaj, through Kaushalya, his senior wife, had one daughter named Shanti, but not a single son. So he was thinking that he was failing his citizens. He was failing his forefathers. What was there to do? He tried everything, but nothing worked. He proposed that he perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. This Ashwamedha Yajna is a vast sacrifice. In the age of Treta, the recommended process to achieve God realization was the performance of yajna or sacrifice. So Dasarath Maharaj presented his idea and Vasishtha Muni and the sages agreed. The Ashwamedha Yajna, you have to get a perfectly proper horse that is flawless in every quality. And that horse is to roam throughout the entire planet Earth with 400 soldiers of the king's army behind it, and behind that, more military. That horse goes, and every single king of the world has to accept that Dasarath is my lord. I am subordinate to him. He is the king of kings of the world. And then they would allow that horse to pass through their kingdom. But if they were not willing, and they had to give all kinds of huge amounts of charity for King Dasarath to perform the Ashwamedha Yajna. But if anyone did not give charity or accept Dasarath as king when the horse came, then there would have to be a big battle. Until that horse came back with no challengers, the Ashwamedha Yajna could not take place. So no one challenged Dasarath. The horse returned after 1 year of traveling and they were to perform the yajna. Vasishtha Muni explained to Maharaj Dasarath that some time back, the four Kumaras, they visited here, and they prophesized that you will have a son when the great sage Rishi Shringa performs a yajna in your honor. The story of Rishi Shringa is very long, but I will abbreviated. He was a very, very pure-hearted, saintly person. Maharaj Dasarath handed his daughter Shanti to a great king named Romapad, who was the king of the Anga dynasty, because he had sons but no daughter. He wanted a daughter. So Dasarath said, "You take care of my daughter." And there was a terrible drought in his kingdom. And the only way this drought could be eliminated is if a pure-hearted, saintly person who had no sense of desire for sense gratification in his heart would step foot on his soil. So Rishu Sringa was that person. He came and eventually he married Shanti. So Dasarath Maharaj invited Romapad Maharaj to send Rishu Sringa to perform this yajna. He performed the yajna and all of the great demigods appeared to accept their offerings. In fact, Lord Vishnu himself appeared on Garuda. And Lord Brahma explained to him that, can you see how all of these great rishis, sages, and devatas are praying to you to free the world of the influence and atrocities of Ravana? And Lord Vishnu proclaimed that I will appear personally with three of my expansions as the son of Dasarath, and I will kill Ravana. But you, all of you demigods, you should take birth in this world through your expansions. Because Ravana has had the benediction that no one could kill him, but he never asked for any immunity from the humans and animals of this world. So I will personally appear as a human, and all of you should expand yourselves as monkeys, and together we will kill Ravana. So the demigods, they incarnated through their own expansions as the various monkeys called Vanaras, like Sugriva, Bali, Hanuman, and many others. They appeared in the area which is now South India called Kishkindha Kshetra. After Vishnu had given this benediction, Rishi Sringa performed, he offered the final oblation into the sacred fire. At that moment, a beautiful, beautiful, effulgent personality appeared from the fire. He was holding a golden pot. In that pot was paramana, or sweet rice, but it was like nectar. This celestial personality gave the pot of sweet rice to Dasarath Maharaj and told him, you give this with your wives to share, and whoever takes this, they will have a divine son. So Dasarath Maharaj first gave half of the sweet rice, paramana, to Kosalya. The other half, he gave half of that to Kaikeyi, and he divided the other half of that into two parts and gave those two parts to Sumitra. Instantly, after taking this paramana, this ambrosial beverage, all three of the wives became pregnant. How effulgent and beautiful they were. They could feel the divinity of the Supreme God within their wombs. After some time, it was on this day, the day of Ram Navami, Kosalya gave birth to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his most illustrious form of Sri Ram. Kaikeyi gave birth to Bharat, and Sumitra gave birth to twins named Shatrughna and Lakshman, yes. So there was a great celebration. It was the fulfillment of the deepest desire of Dasarath and all the citizens of Ayodhya. There was wonderful festivities. There was giving of great charity to the Brahmins. There was all sorts of happiness taking place throughout on this very, very auspicious day. There was music being played. There was thousands and thousands and thousands of Brahmins chanting mantras. There was wonderful kirtans and bhajans taking place. There was giving of millions of cows charity, and grains and charity, and silks and jewels. Everybody was decorating. Throughout the streets of Ayodhya, there was dancing and singing, wonderful feasts, profuse distribution of prasad everywhere. In this way, Ram Navami was celebrated in Ayodhya on the day of the appearance of Sri Ram. As the children were growing up, they became the very, very object of everyone's love. Srila Prabhupada explains in Srimad Bhagavatam, as it is explained in Valmiki's Ramayana, that the four principal expansions of Lord Krishna, Vasudev, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, and Shankarshan, those four all appeared as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. They were all four expansions of the one Supreme Godhead. But Ram was the eldest brother. He was directly expansion of Vasudev Krishna. So, the qualities that they possessed, the love and the compassion that they offered to all living beings, so much conquered the hearts of all the citizens of Ayodhya that their great, great desire was, when will that day come when Ram will be coronated as our king? And this was also Dasarath's great longing. Lord Ram and his brothers became immediately expert in everything they would do. They were learning the scriptures. They were learning how to be kshatriyas by fighting with proper weapons. They were so sweet and so beautiful, with beautiful lotus eyes, every limb, although very powerful, soft as butter, all attractive. One day, when Ram was hardly 16 years old, the great sage Vishwamitra Muni appeared in Ayodhya. He was such a great sage, so famous, that when he came, Dasarath, the king, came to greet him. He fell at the feet of Vishwamitra Muni. He brought him to sit on his own throne. He put Vishwamitra Muni on his throne, and he sat Vishwamitra Muni's lotus feet. Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. This is the standard of the Vedic culture, that even the greatest, most powerful kings will honor and put themselves in a subordinate position to the great devotees of the Lord in the renounced order of life. King Dasarath, after offering praise to Vishwamitra Muni, said, "I am your servant. Whatever you ask of me, I will give you. There's nothing I will not do for you. This is my promise." Vishwamitra Muni said, "This is your promise? You will not go back on your word?" Dasarath said, "Within my means, everything belongs to you." Vishwamitra Muni then began to speak that I have been performing yajna in the dark forest. And the yajna that the great sages perform is for the benefit of all living beings. It is out of compassion. However, I am not able to complete my yajna for a long, long time. Every time myself and the sages are about to complete the yajna, two terrible demons of the named Marichi and Subahu, they come and they contaminate the yajna by throwing flesh and blood and bones and stool and urine and all sorts of other excrements, harassing us. I desire that you send your eldest son Ram to the forest with me, because he is the only one who could destroy these asuras. When Dasarath heard this, it was like a sharpened arrow striking the very core of his heart. He began to tremble and cry, "Ram, he's only a child. He is hardly 16 years old. How can he? He hasn't even completed his education in military arts. He's never fought against anyone yet. He's inexperienced. He cannot go to fight against these powerful, terrible demons, Rakshasas, in the forest. I will personally go and lead all my armies. We will fight against these demons. But let Ram remain home." Vishwamitra Muni opened his eyes. They became red with anger. He said, "Dasarath Maharaj, you have given your word that whatever I asked you would give me. Your entire dynasty will be destroyed. Your integrity and the integrity of all your forefathers will be finished if you do not honor your promise. Now, if you want, I will leave right now. But please know what the reaction will be if I leave without Ram." Dasarath Maharaj did not know what to do. He pleaded again and again, "I will come with you. I will bring my armies. Who is this Subahu and Marichi? Tell me who they are." Vishwamitra Muni explained that they are the servants of Ravana. Ravana has conquered practically the whole universe. And for the little affairs of destroying the yajnas of rishis, he does not come personally, but he sends his representatives, Marichi and Subahu. They are formidable. "But please know," Vishwamitra said, "I could kill them all myself. I have that power. However, if I become angry during the yajna is ruined. So I cannot fight against them. But I promise you, I give you my word, that I will protect Ram. Although he's the supreme personality of Godhead, you're not willing to accept that. I promise you no harm will be done. I will bring him home." Dasarath did not know what to do. He could not conceive that Ram could be so powerful. Because of his natural parental affection, he could only see him as his own son. He turned to Vasishtha Muni, who explained that there's nothing to fear if he's with Vishwamitra. So Ram was sent along with his brother Lakshman. From the very infancy, Lakshman never left the side of Ram. He was his constant companion, always engaging in service to him. And in the same way, Shatrughna was always serving Bharat. So Ram and Lakshman went into the forest with Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni was telling them so many wonderful, wonderful narrations from the scriptures throughout their travels. Lord Ram and Lakshman personally accepted Vishwamitra Muni as their spiritual master. The Lord, who is the source of all knowledge, who is Jagat Guru, the ultimate guru of all, just to show the proper method by which everyone must accept the spiritual path, appearing as a human being, he personally accepted a spiritual master, as did Krishna, as did Lord Chaitanya. Lord Sri Ram every day would massage the lotus feet and the legs of his Guru Maharaj, Vishwamitra Muni. He would go and perform very menial chores like getting wood, or collecting herbs and foods for him. And with great submissiveness, Ram and Lakshman would request Vishwamitra Muni to tell them various stories. The story of the descent of the Ganga, the stories of the various philosophies of the holy scriptures. It is explained in Gita, Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastavta darshana. If you want to know the truth, you must approach a spiritual master, inquire submissively, and render service. The self-realized soul who has seen the truth can reveal that truth to you. Krishna spoke it, but when Krishna appears in this world, he actually acts in such a way to illustrate his own instructions. One day when they went to the forest, they came to a place that was very dark. And Ram was asking, "Can you tell me about this place?" Vishwamitra Muni explained how at one time Indra created a beautiful kingdom here. But over the years, a terrible Rakshasi named Tataka, she is more powerful than thousands of elephants. She eats everything and anything that moves. She has terrorized this place, and nothing living can exist here. Let us go and find her. And Ram, you should free this forest from this terrible demon. So Ram went into that area and started twanging his bow, which was so loud. Tataka came out ferociously, howling. She was giant like a mountain. Ram asked Vishwamitra, "How could I kill a woman?" This was the first demon Ram was going to kill. It was a woman. Krishna also, Putana, was the first demon he killed. So Vishwamitra Muni said, "Yes, a woman must always be protected and always be honored and respected. But this is not an ordinary woman. This is a Rakshasi. She's killing hundreds and thousands of creatures, eating them alive. She must be killed." So there was a terrible fight. She was disguising herself in various ways. Sometimes she would appear as a huge animal with horns and attack Ram. Sometimes she appeared as a huge, gigantic bird and rip off tops of mountains and throw them at Ram. And all the while, Ram with his mighty arrows was destroying all of her illusions. And finally, when everything else failed, she came in her original form and came running at Ram like a mountain, screaming. Her shrieks were causing terror in everyone's hearts. And Ram struck her heart with an arrow, and she fell to the ground dead. Tataka was the mother of Marichi. When they came to the place where the yajna was to be performed, Vishwamitra Muni, he sat in silence for 6 days as the sacrifice was being performed. At the very end, Marichi, Subahu, and a whole army of Rakshasas came down to pollute the sacrifice. Lord Sri Ram, with one arrow, struck the chest of Marichi, and it sent him flying 800 miles into the ocean. Then he killed Subahu with another arrow and destroyed the entire army of Rakshasas. after this, the yajna was completed, and Vishwamitra Muni, he had tears of love in his eyes and appreciation for Ram's wonderful, opulent behavior. Then Vishwamitra Muni said, I want to take you to the city of Mithila. There is a great bow. It was originally the bow of Shiva. And whoever could lift this bow will get the hand of Sita, the jewel of all jewels, as wife. So, on their way to Mithila, there was one rock laying in the forest. And Vishwamitra Muni told Ram, please place your foot on this rock. Lord Ram placed his lotus foot on the rock, and out from the rock came a beautiful, beautiful lady. Her name was Ahalya, the wife of Gautam Muni. And she was cursed due to improper activity to become a stone. But when she appealed to her great husband, the sage Gautama, that please don't make me a stone. I beg forgiveness for the offense I have committed. He said, actually, this is a benediction. Because when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ram, appears, he will place his lotus foot on your head as a stone, and you will be completely freed of all impurities, and you will achieve the perfection of pure love of God. So Ahalya, in great love and affection, explained the whole story to Ram. And now, a pure Vaishnava, she returned to her husband. When they came to Mithila, I only have 2 minutes. When they came to Mithila, Lord Sri Ram was brought by Vishwamitra Muni to meet with King Janak, the father of Sita. And when Janak saw the beauty of Ram, he was thinking, this is the only person who is qualified to marry my daughter. Please come and lift this bow. Janak explained that years ago Shiva, he used this bow to defeat the Asuras. And later on, he gave it to one of the descendants of the Raghu dynasty named Devarata. And this bow has been there ever since. And the descendants of Maharaj Raghu worship that bow as none different than Shiva himself. He said that one time when I was plowing a field to perform a yajna, out from the earth came the beautiful Sita. I took her to my palace and accepted her as my daughter. And I made a vow that only the person who could lift that bow and bend it will marry Sita. So demigods, rakshasas, all sorts of beings, princes, kings, they were all coming, but none of them, not a single one of them, could even lift the bow. Practically no one could even look at the bow. He told this whole story, and he was praying that, Ram, I think you are the one who could string this bow. So the next morning, Vishwamitra Muni brought Ram to the great assembly house. It took 300 strong men to bring the casing where the bow was in, and they lifted it. This bow was so big, was so heavy, was so effulgent. No one had ever been able to even lift it. Sometimes hundreds and hundreds of men at once couldn't even lift it. Sita was looking from a special place in the assembly house, and when she saw Ram, her heart melted in ecstatic love. She prayed to the Supreme Lord, please, please, take my hand in marriage. But when she saw the delicate limbs of Ram and the hardness of the bow, tears were in her eyes. How is it possible that he could do it? Lord Sri Ram would not do anything without the blessings and permission of his Guru Maharaj. He looked at Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra Muni said, "Yes, Ram." He nodded his head. "Go, pick up the bow." With the blessings of his Guru Maharaj, Ram began to walk to where that bow was situated. There was complete silence. Sita's heart was throbbing in anticipation. Janaka was thinking, "This is my only hope. Otherwise, if he cannot do it, my daughter will be a widow forever." You cannot imagine what a suspenseful situation that was. Sri Ram approached the bow, and with folded palms, he offered his respects. Then very, very slowly moved his hand to the center of the bow. It made such a thunderous sound that the entire earth shook like a massive earthquake. Everyone in the assembly hall fell unconscious, except for Vishwamitra, Janak, Ram, Sita, and Lakshman. When everyone came back to consciousness, they saw the bow was broken, and the beautiful form of Ram stood in victory. With Janak Maharaja's permission, Sita Devi came down and put the garland of victory around Ram's neck. And it was at that moment that they first looked at each other in their eyes in ecstatic love of reunion. There was such a wonderful festival that the demigods were showering flowers upon this arena. And immediately, Janak Maharaj sent message to Dasarath to come for the marriage of Sita and Ram. And now it's time for the original Sita Ram, Kishore Kishore, to have their aarti. I would like to thank you very much.